It's Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio.
Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and I'm also the head coach of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. Well, it's hard to believe that July is winding down. We had a wonderful July 4th Independence Day holiday, although, of course, it was raining most of the days. But here it is already, July 24th and 25th, depending on when you're listening to this. Both days, Saturday and Sunday, after the 9 o'clock news. I do want to put a big shout-out to last week's guests, Paul Dean and Ross Conti, who talked about the Halius Safety Symposium, which has to do with mental health and other things that law enforcement and the UNH is dealing with on mental health and other things. And we've been sponsoring this show for many years with the Halius Safety Symposium. That's actually running upcoming August 9th and August 10th and August 11th. We'll also be talking about suicide prevention. We have a wonderful lineup of guests. All you have to do is Google Halius Safety Symposium, H-A-L-I-S, Safety Symposium, and you'll find the information to register. It is free to the public. But joining me this weekend is the very renowned Tech Talk expert and technology expert, Craig Peterson. Craig, thank you for joining me this weekend. I know you have your own radio show, and you create a lot of emails that I read very mindfully. And, of course, your website is craigpeterson, all one word, .com. So thank you for joining me this weekend of July 31st.
Hey, you are welcome, Tom. Yeah, there's always something going on.
Exactly. So we recently, in July, it's been gone a little bit, but the Kaseya ransomware attack. And so we, of course, obviously at Northeast Delta Dental, as soon as we heard about this, we alerted our dentists and our own employees, et cetera. But what I think you need to take a step back and tell us why the Kaseya ransomware attack, why was it so dangerous, and why did it affect so many businesses across the globe?
Well, this type of attack we've seen before. If you think of SolarWinds and what happened with the SolarWinds attack, it's known as basically an attack that's coming from a supplier. So it's a supply-side attack, and that's exactly what happened with Kaseya. Now, when it first happened about 2-3 weeks ago, a lot of people were wondering exactly what's going on here. And it is a very dangerous type of attack, because in this case with Kaseya, it's worse than SolarWinds. They are a provider to managed services providers. So this gets a little bit detailed, but the basic of an MSP, or managed services provider, is they provide IT services for businesses typically. And in the case of Kaseya, they are providing security-based IT services. So it's just getting really bad, really fast, and it's affected tens of thousands of businesses, most likely. When it first happened, we saw in Sweden that much of their public transport system ended up getting shut down. It just went on and on. So we need to be careful when using these types of tools. SolarWinds is another type of tool, and what it's showing us is that the managed services providers, those people who are running IT for our organizations, are under heavy, heavy attack.
So if they are a company set up to help other companies that don't have their own tech departments, so why aren't they more diligent to this possible attack, because given the fact that this should be their area of expertise, right? Or is it a case of eventually, no matter how vigilant and diligent you are, so if someone really wants to attack you, are they going to get you?
Yeah, both of those are true. First of all, they're not paying enough attention, and they're not paying attention to all of the aspects of the systems. Now, Kaseya came out about a week after the attack occurred and said, hey, we are doing everything in our power to stop this sort of thing from happening, so it won't happen again in the future. But we tried to stop this one, but we couldn't. The second part of what you said, Tom, is really important, which is no matter what you do, it is possible to get hacked. And in the case of Kaseya, they did get hacked. We don't really know why yet, and who knows? It could be months before we find out. But you have to be prepared to stop it, just like you did, for instance, right? Northeast Delta Dental, you told your IT people, hey, this happened. Are we using Kaseya? What should we be doing at this point? And that's what you have to do. You have to notice these guys if they get into your systems and before they start spreading. Now, because there's so many businesses involved with this ransomware attack, because it all came through Kaseya, they had demanded what amounted to over $1 billion in ransom, which, of course, is absolutely crazy. They're now saying, okay, well, you know, $73 million. You know, you've heard these types of numbers before. SolarWinds paid about $4.5 million to try and recover. But it really encourages the bad guys. And by encouraging the bad guys, you're going to get this more and more. You're also going to end up with yourself being hacked. Because they say, well, wait a minute, these guys paid the ransom, so let's hack them again. And 70% of these, Tom, come through your employees. They're social engineering attacks. They're attacks where they are getting people to click on links to download, install software. So that's where training comes into play.
Great point there, because I know we do so much of that and so much system things too. But I know our IT leaders always say that employee training is probably the most important thing. Just getting back to Kaseya for a quick minute. So the irony, wasn't it the irony, was that the bad actors were targeting the very systems that are typically used to protect customers from malicious softwares.
Yeah, it really is ironic, right? But again, it's the target, right? Why do you rob the bank? Because that's where the money is, you know, the bottom line, right?
Speaking of money, so let's move off that. Speaking of money, so the IRS takes our money, you know, because the country has to run, although we're in a huge, I don't know, national debt, but in any event, what happens if the IRS has a data breach? Tell us what we do in that situation.
Yeah, this is a real big problem, because we're at this point thinking maybe they did. Remember that we're giving all kinds of disclosures to the IRS. Now, who we work for, where we're getting paid from, where we live, our marital status, on and on. And the Biden administration wants to add to that. The Biden administration wants banks to report any transaction of $600 or more to the IRS. So it's crazy, if you ask me, because just like, again, why do you rob a bank? That's where the money is. Why would anyone go after the IRS? Because that's where all of the information is. Think of what they could do to you, to your business, by gaining access to all of this private personal information. And it looks right now that maybe there was a hack. We're not really sure. ProPublica put a story out there that had personal private information in it that could only be obtained from the IRS. And that really, really makes you think twice about, well, obviously you have to file your taxes, but how much information should they be collecting?
And of course, if there were an IRS breach and things got all screwed up, the IRS doesn't take responsibility for your issues, right?
So yeah, they don't. If your Social Security number is stolen, they will not issue you another Social Security number. And they don't care. It's kind of the bottom line. And they're years behind on processing a lot of different taxes, some corporate, some individual. So they've got a lot of work on their hands. But trying to keep it safe, you know, Tom, I hate to say it, but our government has not been keeping these records safe. All of the records for anyone that had a security clearance at all were stolen by the Chinese government a few years ago. It's absolutely incredible what's been happening to us and what the government just has not protected. Now, again, the Biden administration is saying, well, we're going to pull up the socks and we're going to start fining, and they set out mandates. But these mandates really haven't been effective in business or in the government agencies. So it's a problem all the way around.
Wow, that almost is daunting for sure. So, and I want to talk about the climate crisis, and I know you'll relate this to this today's program. But before we do, before we go to commercial break, with the virtual world basically happening, you know, mid-March of 2020, and you know, for whatever 14, 15 months, and I know some employees are returning. I have made the assumption that despite everybody's best efforts to make sure that people working from home had, you know, secure firewalls, et cetera, that this problem has exacerbated during the pandemic. Is that a true statement? And I know at this point, you know, some employers are getting people back, so maybe the problem will take care of itself. But what can an employer do to make sure that the home computers, you know, of the employees that has the same sort of security as if they were in the office?
Yeah, that's a big problem. Most companies threw stuff up very, very quickly because they kind of had to. They needed to make sure that people were able to do work so that they could still be in business. And so many of them threw up VPNs, these virtual private networks, not understanding what they were doing, particularly the small businesses. And that actually made things worse, because what we're talking about really is the threat footprint. How easy is it for a bad guy or a group of hackers to be able to get into your systems? So now they are not just going after the data center at the office. They now can target anybody who's working from home and then jump through that VPN in order to get into those systems, the data systems at the office. So we have dramatically increased our exposure and our footprint, and the bad guys have really been taking advantage of this in a whole lot of different ways. But we need to make sure we're protecting all of these endpoints. Frankly, businesses should not allow their employees to use personal devices and have any business information on them for a number of reasons. That's always been true. And if you're having someone work from home on a laptop or a desktop, the business should be providing that to that employee, and it should be locked down tighter than a drum so that they are not able to, the bad guys are not able to get onto that home computer and then jump onto the business networks and increase the amount of havoc that they've been causing. But we can't just let employees use their own home computers and consider something like Norton or McAfee, the basic semantic stuff, to be good enough, because it's been proven not to be good enough anymore. In fact, a latest survey I saw, it was a study actually that was done last month, showed that the antivirus software most people and businesses are using, the ones I just named, are only 30% effective against the attacks we're seeing today. 30% effective.
That's good news if you're a baseball player. You probably make $20 million a year. Bad news for business and systems people. So good advice there. Also, of course, the pragmatic reality was that, you know, a lot of people had to get out of the office, you know, in mid-March of 2020, and then at that point, IT department sort of backfilled the security, and of course, that created that exposure point. Welcome back to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio, and this weekend, July 31st and August 1st, is with me is Craig Peterson, and we'll be talking a number of cybersecurity and technology topics, and we talked first about the ransomware attack, and now we're going to migrate into other topics. And one of the things in preparing for the show that kind of intrigued me was your thought that if we want to deal with the climate crisis, again, another irony, we have to embrace nuclear power. What exactly do you mean by that?
Yeah, we have a grid that was set up to have all of this stuff really set up, the power generation, in one place, and then to have all of our individual power generation systems, right, tied together. So we've got a big grid, and we have our Northeast grid, in fact, and what it can do for us and what it provides for us. So there's a whole lot of history there. Now what we're seeing is where you've got all of these windmills that are out there. We've got solar panels on roofs trying to backfeed into the grid. It's not designed for that sort of thing, right? But people want the electric-powered vehicles, et cetera. And I can see that. I understand why they might want something like that. You know, it makes sense. It can be cleaner. But when we get right down to it and we actually look at what's happening, we saw just Indian Point shut down in New York State. This is a nuclear power plant. And the idea behind shutting it down was, well, we're going to cut carbon emissions. And so that's going to help stop man-made global warming. Well, after they shut it down, that first full month without the plant, they saw a 46% increase in the average carbon that is being pushed out. Now, many of us are looking at nuclear power, and we remember the China syndrome and Jane Fonda running around, and, oh, my, the whole world's going to come to an end, right? And Three Mile Island and what happened there. The new generation of nuclear power, this, we're up to about the sixth generation now, that generation of nuclear power can no more fail or melt down than a ball can roll uphill. I love that expression, because what we're doing now, instead of relying on all of these pumps and scram a reactor and do all of these things if something goes wrong, which all require manual intervention, think of Chernobyl. They require systems to be online. Think of what happened in Fukushima, where, again, we didn't have power to shut down the nuclear reactor. In fact, the government and the company that was running it had not provided updates to that nuclear reactor. So don't think 50-year-old technology. Think of modern technology when we're talking about nuclear. And the nuclear technology today is absolutely amazing. We can have a nuclear reactor that powers 20,000 homes, is completely safe. There's no way for it to fail. In 20 years, you replace it. That nuclear waste that we're all worried about was going to have to go to Yucca Mountain, and what happens when we fill the mountain, that really doesn't exist anymore because it's recycled coming out of these reactors. So if we want to fight the climate crisis by cutting back our carbon emissions, nuclear makes a lot of sense. But you know what the biggest hang-up with this is, Tom? Regulations. Our nuclear regulations came into place in the 1950s. They're 60, 70 years old, some of these regulations. We've got to pull up our socks. We've got to start using this new, clean nuclear that cannot melt down, that does not generate all this nuclear waste, if we want our electric cars, our electric buses, and electricity everywhere to run our air conditioning during the hottest days of summer.
So is another part of it is sort of the sound, media sound bites and sort of public perception of nuclear. So how do we get this education out? I mean, you make perfect sense. And in 2 minutes, I totally understood that. But can you get the body politic to understand the point you made, that this isn't your father's nuclear energy, that this is actually ironically going to be better for the climate crisis? But that is like, for many people, that would be like an oxymoron, or if you just say nuclear, they're against it, you know, out of hand without even listening to you. So I think you're going to have to do a lot of public education on that point.
Well, you know the Green New Deal. You've heard of this, right?
Of course,
yeah. From Alexandria Cortez, Ocasio-Cortez, the congresswoman from New York. She is actually on board at having another look at nuclear.
Oh, good. Well, hopefully, maybe we can have her on the show with you, and maybe you can convince her to embrace nuclear power. So let's go. Let's now get back onto the ground and talk about something probably more pragmatic for most people, and that is, and this was news to me as well, but Windows 11 may require us to buy new hardware. Tell us what that headline means.
Well, Windows, as you know, has been the target for the bad guys from a cybersecurity standpoint. And it has been absolutely terrible. I helped develop it way back in the NT days. Of course, there's a lot of code that's been rewritten. It is not structured well as a system. It was never implemented with the internet in mind. So it's been a huge, huge target. And Microsoft has some brilliant people working there. And they have decided we have to solve this cybersecurity problem. So in order to do that in Windows 8 and then in Windows 10, they added some more features. You've heard of probably sandboxing and some of the other things right. that Windows can do. Well, in Windows 11 that's coming out right, really right now, it's in early beta really, is requiring what's called a TPM chip to be on your computer. This is a trusted platform module, and specifically they want you to be running version 2 of this. Now, Apple's had this for quite a while. They have their own TPM implementation that's in their devices that's helped to keep them relatively secure. And I think Microsoft has been on the edge kind of drooling over it. Part of the problem Microsoft has, frankly, Tom, is that you want to continue to run your applications that maybe were written 10, 20, 30 years ago. Well, they were never written with security in mind either. So what Microsoft is going to be doing now is forcing you, if you're going to upgrade, you need to get a new version of your software that's compatible with the security requirements, because frankly, they're tired of being blamed for all of these hacks that are out there. And so this is, I think, a really good step in the right direction, but the problem is, now a lot of people, in fact, the stats I've seen, most people are going to have to buy a new computer if they're going to be able to run Windows 11. Now, I suspect the back pressure coming from all of these people is going to kind of force our friends at Microsoft to loosen some of these requirements. I'm not in favor of them loosening it, but even their own top-of-the-line Microsoft Surface tablet that costs you $5,000 as of today will not run Windows 11.
Well, or maybe they'll give us the hardware for free. That won't happen. I went to Harvard with Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer, and I remember them talking about the future. And here we are. Anyway, in sandboxing, the only sandboxing I know, Craig, is like you. I have some grandchildren, and they love to play in the sandbox. So that was a great explanation, though. And that's a really good public service announcement. So as always, we're always running out of time when I have you. I have to have you on more often. Why don't you just give us a public service announcement on Echo Dot and why sort of sensitive information, by the way, including, you know, passwords, aren't totally, you know, wiped out. I don't think people realize it. So why don't you give us a little one-minute education on that?
Sure. This is a bigger problem than you might think. The Amazon Echo Dot, the Google Home speaker, these Nest thermostats, all of these smart devices have information about us on them, right? It includes the location, it includes passwords, your Wi-Fi information, et cetera. So all of them have the ability to do a factory reset. The problem is, even with a factory reset, that data is still on the device. And some researchers from Northeastern University bought almost 100 of them on different places that were used, and they checked them out. 61% of them had not even been reset, and the ones that had been reset had private information. And I got to throw this in too, Tom. One of my listeners contacted me because someone was using his Amazon account, couldn't figure out why. We ended up with the security people at Amazon. Turns out he had sold his Echo Dot and had factory reset it, and whoever got it was able to get in, and they were using his Echo to make orders for things on Amazon and get them shipped to his house.
Well, how scary is that? Oh, my God.
Isn't that
Yeah, that is cute. I've got to get you back. I mean, I got my juices flowing here. I want to talk more, but we've just run out of time. So that was awesome. We didn't even get to talk about the anti-robocall milestone. But we'll get you on again. So, Craig, thank you for what you do for cyber health in New Hampshire and in the world. And you have a long history in this area. And I always listen to your other radio shows, TED Tech Talk with Craig Peterson, and your other appearances you have on various stations, and your emails are really helpful. So if someone wants to get on your email distribution, what do they do, Craig?
Well, the best thing is just go to craigpeterson.com/subscribe. That's Craig Peterson, SON.com/subscribe. But if you just go to my website, there'll be a little thing that comes up. It's not intrusive. But you get that subscription, and then you get my weekly newsletters and any alerts that I have to send out.
And it's really terrific. That's, again, craigpeterson1word.com. Craig, thank you for joining me this weekend, July 31st and August 1st. Have a great rest of the summer, and